Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Again, good evening, Mr. Edwards. How are you?
Good good evening, Mr. Allen, here from Fortress Studio B, as we take a look at the politics. You know, we've had an election. The results are all known. Betsy Hodges becoming the second woman to become mayor of the metropolis of Minneapolis, if you will. The council seats are accounted for, if you will. Unfortunately, for the first time in 33 years, no African American attained a seat on the city council, and that speaks volumes to the collapse of the political or the black political base, if you will. But, you know, there are a lot of other things out there. New populations of color now in play, if you will, African Americans and Native Americans pushed to the bottom of the pile. But a lot of conversation in the city today, Mr. Allen, late last
yes.
night till 11:30, the Minneapolis Board of Education Special School District Number 1 meeting in an exhausting series of conflicts and et cetera. A lot of discussion about, here's what I don't understand. I have received a number of calls, Mr. Allen, in the last 10 hours, in which the Minneapolis School District and their attorneys have declined to identify how the Board of Education voted in selecting Mr. Knorr to replace Mr. Samatar, who died suddenly and unexpectedly. I've really never heard of anything like that. This was not a personnel matter. This was a public matter of selecting a person to fill a vacancy, which there will have to be a contest in 9 months. I'm understanding from a number of community people that attorneys for the school district have said that they will not be releasing the vote, though everybody in the room, as I understand it last night, knew, for at least 2 weeks. I'm not understanding what that's about. Maybe someone can call it and tell us what that's all about. I don't know why the secrecy. I'm not understanding why the district does not want the vote to be known. Also, the superintendent of Special School District Number 1 took a $23,000 hit on her bonus last night.
Oh, wow.
$23,000 hit. The board only awarded her $7,000 and some change, said some of her performance was good, but a lot was left to be, you know, desired. And I don't think that people saw that coming. I don't think the superintendent saw it coming. But I understand we have a call already. We have callers already. Let's give the number out, though, right quick,
okay,
and then get to our first caller.
Okay. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, the phone lines are open. The number is 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, after checking that caller, just wants to remain in the queue. But our phone lines are wide open.
Everybody trying to hear what others have to say. Again, a selection has been made filling the seat of a expired board member, if you will. The widow of Mr. Samatar denied the opportunity to serve out the remaining 9 months of his term. I got to tell you that, you know, some racism could, you know, be at play, because if Mr. Samatar had been a white individual, particularly given the kind of accolades that everyone gave him upon his passing, there would have been no problem with selecting his widow to finish out the remaining 9 months of his term. I'm just not understanding what I'm being told was a very mean-spirited atmosphere at the board meeting last night, and I understand the board chair was acting like some gangster or some thug from San Juan, Puerto Rico, if you will. Talk very bad to a lot of people, was kind of ugly with the general flow. In fact, he told one board member who, in fact, voted for Mr. Samatar's widow that he was tired and that if she wanted to get an answer to a question, now she's a board member just like he is. They're equal, mm-hmm. really. That she could text it or ask the question at the next meeting. I've never heard of anything like that in a so-called democracy.
That's absolutely nuts. That's crazy. That's how they operate over there, though, you know. So that's pretty interesting. And we've been getting a lot of calls.
Yeah.
A lot of people have been posting on Facebook that they're disgusted with what happened last night at the Minneapolis Public School Systems. And I've invited them, Mr. Edwards, to chime in. I mean, you can always be bad on Facebook, but, you know, let your voice be heard. Our phone lines are open. Again, the number is 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904.
Right. Let me also say this. I found it rather interesting that Steve Brandt, the reporter for the Minneapolis Star Tribune who covers the school board meetings and writing a story about Mr. Nord being the successful replacement, did something very peculiar, and that was he did not identify how the board members voted. Now, normally you and I know that when you have an election like that and a public body, which is what the Board of Education is, votes on something as important as filling a vacancy, you normally talk in terms of how the eight members voted, right? This is a nine-member board, of course, with one vacancy. I assume, and what it had to be, that the vote was 5-3. And it appears that three of the five females on the board voted for Mr. Samatar's widow. Kim Ellison, I think, I understand, was a surprise vote against Mr. Samatar's widow. And that was kind of surprising. But on the other hand, hearing a lot of funny things. I'm hearing that the Koch Foundation, Walmart, et cetera, I'm understanding that some money may have been spread around. Now, I know that sounds like Chicago-type
mm-hmm.
politics. You know what I'm saying, Mr. Allen? But I'm understanding that some money was spread around and some money is being spread around as it pertains to moving towards charter schools as a majority educational institution in the city of Minneapolis.
There's a proposal sent out from the Minneapolis Public School District that kind of laid out the consolidation that they were going to do with the Minneapolis Public School Systems and, put Seed Academy, Harvest Prep over in Lincoln, and I think it's Best Academy is his other school. Where I'm talking about
Masterfree. I understand Masterfree was that is his most newest school was going to be put also in Lincoln, but there is some legal problem as it pertains to federal statutes, and so they backed away from that. I think everyone kind of agrees politically that the ultimate goal is that at the point that the empire, if you will, reaches the 9 through 12, that they would like to move that grade level into the current North High School facility, turning that over to the Seed Academy. That appears to be something that is being talked about, Stan, that the new incoming overseer for colored education, outgoing Mayor R.T. Ryback, has given his blessing and the indication of what he expects. There have been a series of meetings. There will be a meeting on the 19th at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church in South Minneapolis, in which there will be discussions about education, anticipated strategies, and et cetera, in the education of the African-American, if you will. So there's a lot of movement, and, boy, there's a lot of dollars, too, floating around. Boy, there's a lot of education dollars. By the way, I understand last night at the school board meeting, the numbers weren't too good as it pertains to closing the achievement gap. And, you know, we've had some callers here the last couple of weeks, I think, have really enunciated just how bad things seem to be.
I have to stop you for a minute because I have to. You said something about if they're having trouble closing the achievement gap. That kind of confused me because a couple of nights ago, the Minnesota Association of Black Lawyers gave Superintendent Bernadette Johnson the Bestowed Courage Award. And they said for
her courage award? Okay.
For her courageous leadership in eliminating the achievement gap for minority students in Minneapolis. That's the reason why they said. So, I mean, I don't know what level these folks are operating on, but they're obviously have their head in the sky and their fingers somewhere else because the gap.
Well, wait a minute. I'm really confused now because the school board, the managers by law of public education, cut the superintendent by at least $23,000, giving her only $7,000 out of a possible $30,000 for a performance reward, if you will, saying just the opposite. So I'm trying to – where's the black lawyers getting their information?
I think I might have to read two paragraphs of this, Mr. Edwards, so you can kind of get the feel and the flavor of what – this is one of the reasons why, you know, we're viewed – the African-American community is viewed very dysfunctional. And this is one of the reasons. And I read this just before, you know, our production meeting. I said, you know, I have to share this. So
Yes.
Here we go. Minneapolis Public School Superintendent Dr. Bernard Deer Johnson was honored Saturday night, November 9th, by the Minnesota Association of Black Lawyers, MABL, for her courageous leadership in eliminating the achievement gap for minority students in Minneapolis. Johnson received the 2013 Profiles in Courage Award, an annual recognition bestowed on individuals who demonstrate courage and excellence in their leadership. Understand, Dr.
Courage
Johnson.
And excellence. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. What was the board thinking about when they cut her by $23,000 on her bonus?
Yeah, well, that's just it. I don't know because it says Dr. Johnson's leadership in Minneapolis Public Schools has continued endeavor to improve the educational conditions of her bold leadership, eliminating the achievement gap for students of color in Minneapolis. A statement from MABL said. Now they didn't get a statement. Usually, you do a press release, you get a statement from an individual, a member, a person. So no one was claiming this. And so they're saying here in this statement, they gave her this award because she eliminated the achievement gap for minority students in Minneapolis. Now, these are attorneys, and I'm looking at it right here in black and white, released from them.
Wow. You know, one of the things I would suggest, because, you know, oftentimes we are accused here on the Ronnie and Donnie program with, you know, making up stuff and et cetera, I would suggest that even as we are in studio here that you post that. And so people can link up to it and analyze it. The reason I'm fascinated because Mr. Gary Cunningham, the powerful leader and founder of the African American Alliance, who we'll be talking about at the top of the hour, is the recipient of an award. Either it was over the weekend or it's going to be this coming weekend, basically with the same declaration, courage, proficiency, success, and et cetera, in eliminating problems facing the African-American community. The only thing is the things that they talked about that he has accomplished, if I'm not mistaken, those are things he is paid to do.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them had to do with projects here. Some of them had to do with projects that are the cornerstone of the Northwest Area Foundation in the far west, particularly in the Yakima Valley around Pasco and Yakima, Walla Walla, places like that, if you will. So we're hearing people are doing things, but man, they're well compensated to do these things. These are things that weigh against their performance or lack of. So, but a lot of awards now being given away for successfully bringing prosperity to the African American community.
Yeah,
so,
I
was just kind of wondering when the latest employment statistics will come out, because I assume that unemployment amongst African Americans here in the Twin Cities is below the national average.
I think it's above the national average, Mr. Edwards.
Oh, can't be. We're getting ready to employ upwards of 600 African Americans on the Viking Stadium, from what I'm hearing, though. Someone told me that the number is only 68, but I said I couldn't understand how I could make a mistake of 600. but I was kind of waiting for the latest Department of Labor statistics because, man, there's a lot of work out here for black people. In fact, I saw something today downtown at a building there at 5th and Nicollet across the street from XL Center. a 20-some story luxury apartment. And 250 construction workers, and I think you and I, Mr. Allen, over the last year have monitored that, and we've yet to see any African-Americans on the site. So
Yeah, exactly. That also goes for the, Mr. Allen, that also goes for the this company, Michaels, with the red trucks all over Minneapolis. I took a drive with a landlord in North Minneapolis across, you know, down Washington, up Broadway, down Penn. And we looked at these trucks, and there is not one African-American in any of those trucks.
Now, is Michael's the company that does streets and sidewalks and stuff like
yes,
that?
Yes, streets, sidewalks, electrical, putting the signs up. I mean, they do a variety. They have a
website. They do a variety
of stuff. Yeah.
Now, I understand that the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, under the dynamic leadership of Velma Corvell, I imagine she'll be getting an award pretty quick for her outstanding job, though there's a very unpleasant article in this week's edition of City Pages about how her department operates, but she's certified Michaels as being one of the most proficient compliance individuals or entities in the city of Minneapolis as it pertains to MBEs and WMBEs, that's women and minority businesses.
Uh-huh.
And you're saying that, I mean, other people have told me that, and I've seen that you see these pretty red trucks, but you never see any African Americans. And I know that the building on 5th and Nicollet, which was just completed, they just topped it off this afternoon. All of the four of our major television stations applauding the topping off, you know, where they put a tree up on the last girder that goes up. And I'm saying, well, yeah, that was great, but no African Americans were ever on the project.
But see, we have to be myth busters right now on that compliance thing, because a lot of people don't know that to qualify or to say that you're in compliance, all you have to do is have a affirmative action report submitted to the Department of Human Rights, to the state, and they sign off on it, which say you've hired two guys, two black guys, two native guys, you know, we're the first to get hired and first to get fired. But as far as enforcement goes, no one goes out and checks any of those sites from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights or the Department of Human Rights. And so basically they bring a blank check down to the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights and say, here, we're qualified with the state, and there's no further questions asked. Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
Let's get the caller.
Mm-hmm. You're live on the air. Who's calling and where you're calling from? Okay, they dropped. Okay, they hung up. They obviously did not want to have a conversation here with us tonight.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, the phone lines are wide open, so let's see if we can get those calls. The Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, again, as I said, as we reported exclusively, actually back in late September, first week in October, Velma Corvell was given a letter on the 25th of September. I think, Mr. Allen, you finally forced the city of Minneapolis to give you a copy.
Yes,
in which she was told that she would not be reappointed. Many are saying that Michael Kip Brown, formerly of Minneapolis and head of the so-called Police Oversight Committee, would become the next director of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department. But now some are saying that he may very well become Betsy Hodges' chief of staff, if you will. You know, he's been very close to the councilwoman, if you will, now mayor-elect, if you will. And so I'm not understanding totally what the future of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department will be, but that contract to who will monitor the workforce, which is nothing but a substitute word for affirmative action, diversity, equity, all those other things, no one seems to know. Now, we're coming up pretty quick on the beginning of preparation for the construction of the People's Stadium, which will take place starting with the demolition on the 2nd, 3rd of January. And then we will begin to see work by the middle part of March with upwards of 1,500 workers on the site, if you will, on each and every day, and a total of 7,000 workers based on categories, progress with the construction, and et cetera. So it looks like, Mr. Allen, there's going to be a lot of employment in the African-American community at a very outstanding compensation level. I mean, anywhere of $25, $30, $40 an hour, right?
Oh, yeah, they're supposed to be making, like, big money. But, you know, I posed a question, Mr. Edwards. There's this national site. There's this national site. Someone's
sounds like one of your phones is ringing there in the studio.
Yeah, and I took care of it.
Okay.
On this site, it's a site called Soda Heads about opinions, and you ask questions. And I asked a question, $700,000 to a nonprofit or a construction contractor to hire. And I wrote, please answer this question. If you control $1 billion and you wanted people in the black community to work, would you grant a nonprofit training organization money or find a trustworthy woman or minority-owned contracting firm that's already in a trade union, give them resources, dollars, to hire unemployed people? What makes sense to you? Now, we already know what they did in Minneapolis, but one response was, it says, thinking about this, Don, you lack the understanding of a progressive mindset. From their point of view, no one is properly educated. Since they know what is best for you, you need training, retraining. So I guess all brothers need to be retooled in their eyes. So that's one of the many responses that we got back from that. So,
well, I can understand that. I have to say to you that the doctrine that is at play as they prepare for the construction on the People's Stadium is not for underemployed persons, because the folks that are going to have to work on that stadium based on its design, structure, and et cetera, are basically persons who are already journeymen, have put in thousands of hours, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of conversation about, you know, the folks that are going to come in and start working, you know, it's going to take short 5, 6, 7 week training, if you will. That's just not going to happen. That's not factual. That's not true, if you will. I think Alex Tittle needs to kind of step up and begin to clarify, give transparency, if you will, clairvoyance, if you will, to what the citizens should expect. I assume that Mayor-elect Betsy Hodges, who's been on the council for, 8 years,
mm-hmm.
Has a pretty good feel for what she expects. She's been saying, doing campaign 2013, that she was keen and aware of the needs of communities of color, and particularly the African Americans, if you will. Her husband, who was the number two man at the Northwest Area Foundation and himself an African American who grew up in South Minneapolis, certainly understands the battle that the African American community and other communities of color have pursued in trying to be a part of the economic uplifting, if you will,
sure.
Jobs, economic development. Job development, business development.
We have a call?
Go ahead.
Yeah, yes. Caller, let me see here. Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Hello? Caller, you are live on the air.
Yeah. Feel free to call back. We're apparently having some problems there in Studio A, locking him in. What seems to be the problem, Don, technically? Are they not able?
They're listening to the show from their laptop or wherever, and they're not saying anything.
They need to, you know, but again, the lines, the telephone lines are open. What we're talking about right now is we started out, we thought we would have some observations from the Somali community or others who were at the school board meeting last night that turned into something interesting, and we then segued into what we can kind of expect, if you will, as we prepare to take a look at employment and education here in the city of Minneapolis over the next couple of years, you know what I mean? As I said before, I'm everywhere I go, I'm hearing that the best of all worlds is in place. Mr. Allen really started this part of the discussion by reading a award that was given to the superintendent of schools from the Black Lawyers Association, talking about the wonderful job. I wonder, was the nomination made by some of the black lawyers who work for the district on a contract basis?
Yeah, that could be a possibility. That could be.
Yeah, and I have a couple. I have a couple in mind.
Matter of fact,
I just kind of wonder, you know, they have a nice contract, they handle mediation and terminations and et cetera against employees of the district, specifically African Americans, and maybe that's who some of the attorneys were that submitted her name and wrote up those accolades, if you will, indicating a wonderful job that she's done. And as I said before, Gary Cunningham is to be the recipient, or already is the recipient, of a similar type of award from another organization that talks in terms of the wonderful job that he has done in alleviating poverty and miseducation and et cetera. And so, you know, I know, you know, we probably are off on the wrong foot because it appears that things are just wonderful, really, in our city, okay? Now, let me ask you this question, Ms. Allen. As I said before, the tally has been completed. We have the composition of our city council. We know who our mayor will be, the new council, and we were lucky enough and very appreciative of having one of the successful challengers, if you will, Vong Yang, on our program last week. And we also had some discussion here over the last couple of minutes about the future of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, which I know that Councilmember Bong Lee has a significant familiarity. Remember I said to you earlier, there's a heck of a story in city pages, if you will, talking about a lawsuit that has been filed against Velma Corvell, the department in the city, and man, it talks in terms of the atmosphere of terror in that department.
And I am actually looking for that right now, because where you're sitting, I'm over here in the studio kind of dancing around here on the computer trying to figure out where
it's,
that
it's city pages, yeah, and a young lady who was terminated, if you will, I think in August, if you will, has filed suit, and it makes quite interesting reading, if you will. And should right be right there. You should be able to find it on your computer, city pages. But maybe there's someone that's read it, may want to call in, comment on it. I'm a little puzzled because this has been going on for a long time. As we first reported, and I reported in my newspaper columns 2 years ago, the amount of damages that the department had to pay out to three individuals, two unfortunately who are now deceased. You know, that is not that department is not a healthy place to work in. It was Lauren Marka and the late Corky Taylor, who were treated very, very badly. Probably the most successful employee at this point in receiving damages and being awarded damages received over $180,000 from the department, if you will. And that was a story which everyone tried to, you know, keep suppressed, except for, you know, this columnist through the spokesman recorder. And
Mr. Edwards.
Yes.
Oh, my God, I know this woman. Seema,
yes, I figured you do.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And I'm going to have to be using the words alleged, and things like that with this. But this young lady right here, beautiful. Beautiful young lady who works at the Minneapolis Department. I'm not even going to read what's on the city pages wrote.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that she was manipulated, hit on, promised things. I think she even fell for a couple of them right into someone's, allegedly right into someone's household that we all know on this station. And she asked, we had a conversation a while ago. When I was down there, and I was going to give her a hard time, but she just seemed so frustrated, and she was scared to have a conversation with me without looking back and seeing if Velma was coming around the corner or if someone was looking at her talk to me.
Yes, yes, yes. Because one of the things she alleges in the article you have there in front of you, we have on our computers, is that she was retaliated against for being a whistleblower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, it involved Tony Newborn, the head of investigations. Of course, Kip Brown, who she worked with a number of years ago at the State Department of Human Rights, Kip Brown. And yes,
the phone lines
and he encouraged
up.
Her. Huh?
The phone lines are lighting up right now.
Oh, I bet you they are. And so she maintains that there's significant skullduggery. She actually was aware of, though she had not arrived then, but she was involved in some discussions about a year ago with respect to the shredding of
mm-hmm.
so many documents down there in the Civil Rights Department as they got rid of their cases. That's how they got rid of their backlog 3 years ago. They shredded thousands of cases.
Yeah, and this runs
along
the same
line. In fact, I have in my confidential file a significant number of letters that were sent out to citizens being told there was no probable cause for their case, and the case was never even investigated. But I wrote about that extensively in the Spokesman Recorder in 2009, 10, and 11. City didn't want to deal with it, but I'm aware that a number of individuals went ahead and filed legal actions based on what I wrote about and well as information that they were providing to me as a journalist back in 2010 and 11. And, you know, it's just not shocking. It's not surprising, you know. Again, let's give that phone number out. Let's phone number. People
okay,
want to call?
Yes. We have standby callers, 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Let's see who this is.
All right, see if we can get them through.
The
go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hello.
Yes, hello. How are you?
Yeah, what can we do for you, sir?
Well, yeah, the mediation agreement there with the city, I thought people can go to the Urban League and file complaints with someone.
Oh, that was all a sham, sir. I don't know where you're calling from or how much you – that was all a sham. That was to make it appear that there was a relationship with community and the Civil Rights Department and by extension the city. There is no mechanism for that to happen. That's just a sham.
Well, so a lot of people report, you know, they're, you know, come on now.
How they report what? You mean complaints of discrimination
yeah.
and et cetera?
Yeah, yeah.
Basically, that's not happening. Basically, there's not been a audit or an inventory of cases that have been filed with the Civil Rights Department in the last 3 years.
Well, I think Betsy is going to do a good job with that, I think.
You think she's going to do it with? Let me tell you why I got you on the line. This is a good time to segue into this to show you how careless this department is. I don't know where you're calling from, sir, but I assume that you're aware that, of course, we have a female chief of police here in Minneapolis. Her name is Janae Harto. In fact, she's a Native American. And she was actually just appointed chief for less than a year ago, okay? She received a letter like any of the rest of department heads here in our city indicating that she would not be reappointed, which was really stupid, and you know, with the new administration coming in. Lo and behold, Mayor-elect Betsy Hodges, working on a narrative that has an African-American assistant chief in Seattle, Washington, who actually was born and raised here, but he's been in the Seattle Police Department for 28 years, coming here to take over as chief.
Mm.
And the scenario that is being plotted and planned, in fact, there's a delegation of city officials in Seattle, Washington, right now as we speak, Mr. Allen and caller, wherever you're calling from. The scenario is that legally in the month of January, the city could pay the chief off, give her 1 year severance at the chief's level, and because she's not close enough to retirement, then push her back into the ranks. They could knock her down to the position of commander. They could send her back as a deputy chief, which I doubt very much, or they could push her all the way back to lieutenant. I don't think they do that. But anyways, what has happened is that Mayor-elect Betsy Hodges has committed herself to removing Chief Janae Harto. And the plan is, it's a very devious, diabolical plan, is to pit the African-American community and the Native American community against each other by virtue that the assistant chief in Seattle is an African American, and I hate to say that some of our black police officers are in on this, if you will, as a part of trying to recapture their magic. They had been demoted after the chief took over, but at the same time she promoted a number of other African Americans. So it's a bad situation, but what they're trying to do now in these negotiations that are going on in Seattle is attempt to find cause to remove Chief Harto, Mr. Allen, and if the caller is still with us, indicating that she has not moved with enough dispatch and speed on the Green Bay situation. And I have to say, as a monitor for the Department of Justice, that she has to be very careful on that, because it happens to be that these two police officers who were just outrageous with their conduct in Green Bay are also veterans, and one of them is, you know, still on active military duty per se. And so she has to be extremely careful. The city has to be extremely careful with the actions that they take, though I'm made to understand by sources within the Police Federation that they have received letters of intent of action, which could possibly lead to their suspension and to their termination. But lo and behold, the Leadership Alliance here in Minneapolis, Mr. Allen and caller, have decided that they will participate in this sham, if you will, in order, Mr. Allen, to keep attention away from some of the other issues that they feel that, you know, they can be involved in and make some money. So the plan at this moment, my mayor-elect, Betsy Hodges, is to remove the current chief of the department, Janae Harto, who is a Native American, and is also an admitted lesbian, if you will. I'm just not understanding it. As one who is very familiar with the workings of our police department and city departments, I'm not understanding, though I do understand the attempt to pit two communities who have no representation in city government. They have no membership for the first time in the case of African Americans, first time in 33 years there will not be an African American on the city council. First time in 12 years there will be no Native American on the city council. So I'm glad you kind of raised the question. You seem to be in the affirmative for Betsy, so I just hope
I don't think Betsy will do anything like that. I think you're misinformed with your sources on your information you just did.
I don't think so. I think that information is absolutely pure. Let me ask you this caller, because these are the kinds of exchanges we like to have. What would make you think that I am misinformed?
Well, sir, Betsy have a lot of things to do than to sit down and get rid of Janae. Janae's she's doing good. You have the 2.0, the officers are following. They're professional. They have cards. They wear long sleeves. And I think you're misinformed about that piece.
And they beat Negroes. So does that make them good?
Well, they kill Negroes.
Sure.
But anyways.
Yeah.
That's not a possibility? So you think that the meeting going on in Seattle right now has no probative value or interest,
there's any meeting in Seattle, sir. There's no proof of that. You're just fabricating stories sometimes.
Oh, no, not fabrication. Now, if you go check tomorrow, if you get a chance, call up and ask where the council president and others are. And by the way, I'll give you the name of the assistant chief.
I laid that trap.
His name is Nick Mutz.
You can Google that.
No. I'm giving you the name of who it is that they want to bring in. Now, we're not talking about Googling. Now, we're talking about factual information. Yeah. Yeah, he grew up in South Minneapolis. Okay? He grew up, went to Washburn. He and Mr. Cunningham another police officer, a couple of other police officers, were all homies, ran together and et cetera in that old South neighborhood, if you will, out there around 44th, 45th, and 4th Avenue, if you will. And
we have another caller.
Okay, let's get that caller. We thank our caller from Chattanooga. Thank you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Caller, and we have two callers holding. This caller, just go ahead, caller.
Would that be me?
That would be you.
Yes, that'd be you. Go right ahead.
Okay. because I have one or two, in following your show for some time and also being an avid reader of the Independent Business News Network, I remember a story that broke. It was about Minneapolis Public Schools, and it had something to do with Al Flowers, who had a program, and that the program had ran its course, but I think you or Mr. Edwards had went to check, and that there was no records of any achievements or any results as a result of this program and this funding. There was no reports to back this up. Do you recall what I'm talking about?
Well, sir, I know exactly
Mr. Allen, go ahead, take that one.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about because I sent a data privacy request to the Minneapolis Public Schools to find out about the Community Standards Initiative to get copies of the report of the success for through their fiscal agent with his Bethel, what's the name of his church? Clarence Hightower. They have a church in North Minneapolis. And his church is the fiscal agent for – New Bethel, yes, is a fiscal agent for this Community Standards Initiative Minneapolis, known as CSI Minneapolis. And the person who actually sent me the email said there has been no reports submitted at all whatsoever to the Minneapolis Public Schools regarding CSI. But then again, that's a catch-22. You know, did they ask for reports? Or did they just put the money out there in the street just to keep people's mouths shut, you know? There's always that possibility.
Cool. Good question, and the reason that I ask is because of another question. I was reading a letter that a lady sent to the Council on Black Minnesotans today. And
today?
It's
today? Okay.
November 13th.
Okay.
Okay, and it seems that the same gentleman, Al Flowers, has just gotten some money to do something in regards to dropouts. Now, from what I understand, I don't know if I should read the story, if I should just kind of go through the kind of.
Well, just give me a piece because we have like two people holding.
Okay,
so,
okay, you have other callers. There's a gentleman who was highlighted, who was also featured on the news. Here's a gentleman who single-handedly raised the stakes of graduation in Minneapolis Public Schools by re-enrolling over 300 students back into school.
Wow.
Not only that, he was highlighted, he was awarded, he had an award from St. Thomas University, Professor Levy Pound, presented him an award as Youth Champion of the Year. In fact, when you talk about him, dropouts to drop-ins is what he does. He turns dropouts into drop-ins, and he's been walking the streets and doing this particular work, and he's not funded by the city, the state, or the federal government. In fact, if you go to WCCO Channel 4, Reg Chapman, and if you go in the search engine and look at One Man's Mission, you will see how his work was highlighted. Reg Chapman followed him on the work it is that he does. And so my question is, and I don't know if this should go to Minneapolis Public Schools or anything like that, but from what I found out, that they've never, and I was reading this lady's letter, they've never even had a conversation with him. In fact, when he was presented this particular award, James Burroughs was there. And they never said congratulations to him. They never talked to him about, you know, how he accomplished this and how he could be a plus and or an asset to what it is that they're doing. But I do know that he was responsible for the raising of the graduation rate this past year.
Okay.
So here's a guy that's doing this with no money. So why do they go and give a guy who's failed them, has taken money, why would they go and give money to somebody like that again? I mean, I know... because I know Mr. Edwards alluded earlier to how, you know, money is being spread around and that money is being spread around to really divide and conquer.
Uh-huh.
And I know there's a lot of other issues in regards to, I mean, as well as the achievement gap and other things surrounding the school. And so, to me, giving money to a failure suggests that they want someone else to fail again. They don't want to give the money to someone who is results-based already.
Ooh. All right, we will, you know, Mr. Allen's been on top of this. We will certainly encourage Mr. Allen and our staff and team to examine this, and certainly a question needs to be posed. I know Mr. Allen has asked Stan Allen, no relation, different spelling, to respond to some of this, and just as the community was told today that the vote on last night on the replacement on the board would not be made public for 2 weeks. You never can get any response. It's just like that $600,000 that disappeared from the City Inc. that never has been explained. Appreciate the call, sir, but we will get on top of that. Stay with us. All right. All right. Mr. Allen, those other callers. You say you got a couple other callers?
Yeah, we have another call. We have a lovely call here from Minneapolis. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi. I was actually calling in. I'm speaking on the same thing the other caller just spoke on. I heard you talking about the education system in Minneapolis. I did my own research. I'm from Minnesota, but I don't live there anymore.
Okay.
And when I did my research, I found out about this L Flowers. And I made my phone calls to find out, who is this guy? Why is he getting funding again for some other project, but he couldn't show the results from the first one? That didn't make sense to me. So I started doing more research. And then I found out there was a guy doing the same work, getting these kids back in school, but he wasn't getting funded at all. What do you need funding for if he doesn't need to do it?
Mm-hmm.
Funding would make it better, yes. It would make it a lot better. And if we could all get together and help this one individual, not this guy that people know about because he was a mayoral candidate or whatever he was, get this average everyday Joe that's able to reach out and push these kids and encourage them to get back in school and walk with them through graduation and into secondary education. But we're going to give the money to someone that couldn't show what he did with it before? That doesn't make sense to me.
I think those are excellent questions that I think the school district and others should be able to answer, because this has been going on for quite some time, and I know Mr. Allen has raised serious questions about it. Appreciate it. Now, you said that at one time you had a child in the Minneapolis public school system?
I was a child in the Minneapolis school system, and the bad part about it is I'm black. I can't say African-American because I've been told I'm not African, so I'm black.
Okay.
And this was back in – I graduated in 92, and it was hard for me being the only – two graduating blacks in my class then. And it was so hard for me where the teachers, they treated me terrible. I mean, awful. Where I would do my homework, hand it in, they tell me they never got it. They put me in special ed classes saying I couldn't do it. I was a straight A student. Why did you put me in special ed? Because I wasn't handing in my homework? But I was. Then come to find out the teacher was taking my name off my homework and putting other students' names on it. Why? Because I was a little black kid, and they can lose her. Who cares?
Right.
So my parents, they made sure they were there. They stepped in, did everything they had to do. I graduated great. I don't think it was 3.5 back in 92. I have now a bachelor's degree. I have a two-year degree, and I'm working on another bachelor's, which I'm going to go on to my master's. And I do credit Minnesota for that, because they opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Oh, okay.
But that makes me go back, and I still keep up on what's going on. And I do that because I know it's now more racially diverse now. So I want to see what's happening with these African-American students now that there's more of them in their face.
Right. Well, they're failing more miserably now than at any time in the history of the district. That's why we were, I don't know if you caught us at the top of this program, but last night the Minneapolis School Board cut by $23,000 the bonus that they've been giving to the superintendent for a job well done. She had a range of 0 to 30,000. She thought she was going to get 30,000. They gave her 7,000 last night and told her she needed to do a better job. Actually, some people say that based on the low test scores, low achievement, and et cetera, that she probably should be terminated. But, you know, that's a decision for the policymakers. Anything else? We appreciate you taking the time to call. By the way, what school did you go to, Henry or North?
I went to North.
Okay, you were a polar bear. Yeah, it's really sad what's happening to your school, because they are doing everything they can to make North disappear.
Exactly.
Over the last 6 or 7 years, it's really been sad.
Right,
thank you for calling in.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, Mr. Edwards, No, they're just in the queue. They decided to be in the queue.
Okay.
I checked that while we listened. But
okay.
There was just something I have to bring up that just shows the hypocrisy of this city. Now, I'm not happy that WCCO Morning News host Steve Murphy got his ass whooped and he got robbed while jogging to the bus stop early Thursday morning. But why is it news? We have kids that go to Minneapolis public schools that get beat up and robbed on these corners waiting for public buses every day, and we don't see this in the news. But the minute someone in the media or this Caucasian man gets beat up, it's on every news channel in town this morning. I mean, I've seen this thing so many times today that I'm just sick of seeing it. And I'm like,
let me say this, Mr. Allen. Now, you know, of your conservative blend here, mm-hmm. you got to remember this. First of all, has been a policy that has been in existence for a long time. Something happens to a person of color, it's really not relevant unless they've done something to a Caucasian. But in a situation in which a Caucasian is the victim under all in any circumstance, you have to remember the situation with Sergeant Clifford of the elite special SWAT team, who at a bar way out in Maple Grove, actually almost to Hanover, you remember he hit an individual, sucker punched him, knocked him cold, put him in a coma. Gentleman has had 3 or 4 operations, but you remember there was tremendous coverage of that, and Sergeant Clifford was convicted and sentenced to imprisonment. But you remember that the victim in question was a man who worked in the press room for the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
Yes.
So you have to understand the importance of who's important and who's not important. So Mr. Murphy, is it Murphy that you?
Yes, Mr. Murphy
is an important person. I imagine he has a lot of friends in the newsroom at WCCO, and he allegedly was jogging. Is that right? He was jogging to the bus stop?
Jogging to the bus stop.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume that his assailants were black.
You know, that's one thing that they stayed far away from, but he did say that he recognizes one from a mugshot for some robberies in another city, which I think is total BS anyway, but, you know.
Let me make sure I get this right in my mind. A mugshot from another city, and that he thought he recognized the person from a mugshot in another city. Was that St. Paul or Duluth or Rochester California, or where?
Several men got out of the SUV and pushed him face down the sidewalk, taking his wallet. Murphy said he stumbled to the bus. The bus driver took him. The driver took him to Hennepin County Medical Center, which was on the driver's route. Murphy told WCCO that he recognized one of the men for a recently published mugshot from another aggravated robbery in Anoka County.
Well, let me go back. I have to go back with respect to policy. The bus driver of a Metro Transit bus who was on a schedule at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, who happened to be going on a route that took him by MC, stopped the bus and went in and told the emergency room that he had a victim on his bus. Is that what we're supposed to believe?
It was 2:30. It was sometime between 2:30 a.m. and 3 a.m. So it
doesn't make any difference. 2:30 and 3 a.m. But it doesn't make any difference. So this bus driver stopped his bus, discontinued his route, as he pulled up in front of the General Hospital. I mean, yeah. Is that right? Wow. And this happened Thursday?
Yes, this happened Thursday morning, 2 a.m.
Oh, wow. Oh, okay.
He says Murphy said he stumbled to the bus, and the driver took him to Hennepin County Medical Center. Now, had that been a black man, the driver would have said, don't pull that. I just, that robbed crap with me, buddy. No money, no ride. Better still, I'll call
you. Well, but let me also say this. The drivers on these buses have emergency switches.
Yes, they do.
Why didn't the driver call for the transit authority police, who are all in the vicinity, particularly if they're in close proximity to downtown? I mean, we watch the local transit police, who are as well outfitted as our local Minneapolis police. His first responsibility was not to continue to move the bus, but to call for an emergency first responders, and starting with the transit authority, because the perpetrators may have still been in the area and may have boarded the bus and robbed and beat everybody on the bus. So I'm just not understanding the story, but I'm quite sure after listening to this program, they'll get it together, huh?
Yeah, and we do have another caller.
Let's get the caller.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead, please.
Brothers, how are you guys doing?
Real good.
All right, how are you?
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I got a little message that you guys is going to be talking about, something about the school board meeting.
Oh, the school board meeting last night that lasted until 11:30? Yes, we were, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't walk out until 12 o'clock midnight. So, that's a lot of respect for the people with endurance that stay. You know, when everybody's gone, that got the paychecks, but the issues are enormous at the late hour. So,
okay.
But what I will say is that I think I encourage all independent media. And if you know mainstream media, I use that word mainstream loosely, to do their diligent research, because I think we've hit a new low in Minneapolis where the 4-year black male graduation rate is up in the 90 percentile.
Uh-huh.
So meaning that 90%. Of our black male population in Minneapolis public schools are not graduating in 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I say that because in their own identified data in their presentation yesterday, they listed that the graduation rate for 4 years was 63% for African Americans. Now, anybody mm-hmm. that's familiar with how school data and statistics are noted, they're very murky. They don't tell a straight story. So you also have different subgroups that are a part of that analysis. The subgroups are your ELL population, which is a lot of Somali, you know, black males, Somali males, as were one black people, African people in that subgroup.
Uh-huh.
Special education, which you already know is disproportionately represented by black males,
uh-huh.
Homeless and highly mobile,
uh-huh.
and free and reduced lunch.
Uh-huh.
Those are the subgroups that are, all those subgroups are two digits percentages and up, like at least 20% and up. So they don't factor in those subgroups in the overall African-American category. These are two separate categories.
Okay.
So if you would combine all those categories inclusively and take Minneapolis Public Schools as a whole district, including contract alternatives, the 4-year graduation rate for black males that are not graduating would be around 90%. And I challenge anyone otherwise to dispute that when the data fully comes out.
Hey, Mr. Edwards and Sir Caller, if I must interject, I'm on the Minnesota Department of Education's website, Data for Educators. And the 4-year graduation rate for the Minneapolis Public Schools with a count of 1,243 is 50.1%. But that also includes 8.7% of dropouts and 31.9% of continuing that are staying over an extra year, as you might say. And there's 230, which is 9.3% unknown. So that graduation...
I'm trying to catch it on my computer. What's that percentage of unknown?
I gotta break this down because this caller is so on point, because this is what, you know, I'm working on my master's degree in teaching at Hamline University, and so I'm all into this stuff right now. And so I'm looking at this stuff, I'm listening to this caller, and I actually have this bookmarked on my computer, this particular page for parents and educators. And it says, go ahead.
I mean, we're dealing with a crime against humanity. I remember some years ago I was in a circle conversation, when the covenant, quote unquote, was going on. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned this to the Honorable Keith Muhammad, Keith X, Keith Abdul, U.S. House representative from Minneapolis, who denied he was in the Nation of Islam to actually
Now Representative Keith Ellison you're talking about. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's who we're talking about. Yeah, because I don't know which name, I don't know which name he goes by, but I mentioned before that, you know, we're dealing with a United Nations crime against humanity with these kind of statistics. And it's just really, it's an amazing thing that our black media should be more engaged. I'm talking about, and I'll say the spokesman does a much better job than the other paper in town in relationship to that, obviously, because they're a stakeholder and a contractor with the public school system. But, I mean, the numbers that we're seeing right now is beyond a crime against humanity, and it's amazing that our community is not banging the doors down, literally, to have justice for our specifically our young black males. Because if you're not graduating at a 90% rate, I mean, you can't go out to the community and blame parents or something like that on that kind of high number.
Yeah.
And
a lot of
people are getting paid money now to go out and blame parents and blame families and do the whole blame game. But that's going to be real played out, and people are going to really be looking like 50 years a slave ongoing, you know, when they do that kind of community engagement. So I just encourage you, brothers, to look into that. It's definitely a new low, and it should be an international news story on the front pages of every paper in the country.
And I need to ask this caller one question. So you said they had a presentation where the graduation rate for black males was 63%?
No, 63% for African Americans as a whole did not graduate in 4 years.
Okay, and
just to reverse, Mr. Allen, of what you're saying.
Okay. So I'm looking at the.
So that would be 37% did.
Yeah.
Right.
37.
Right. So 63% didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
But if you would disaggregate that all and focus on black boys as a whole system, including those subgroups, I would put my money on anything that would say 90% of our black boys are not graduating in 4 years.
Right.
They sure are.
All right, point well made. And, of course, what we also know deep down as older African-Americans is that these young men are being warehoused in preparation to be sent into penitentiaries.
No doubt about it, and they're worth more in penitentiaries, unfortunately, than they are in their own communities. But, you know, we have slave traders out here in our own communities that are cashing in our young boys for dollars, and we got to keep our eyes and ears open because there's a lot of money in the cotton business out here.
Yes, sir. You know, by the way, callers, I'll let you go on that particular note. I would suggest to every African-American who is listening to this program or talks to someone and has an influence, they need to go see the movie 12 Years in Slavery. Really get a perspective of how the real America operated and why some of the decadence and failures that we're now confronted with. Hell of a movie. Appreciate it, caller. Thank you.
Thanks a lot,
brother. All right.
Mr. Irvin, we have another call, and we'd like to
Let's get the caller. This education thing is generating. Yeah. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead.
Who are we having on the air? We'd like to welcome Doug Mann, school board candidate, Minneapolis Public Schools.
Okay.
Doug, you're live
on
the air.
All right, Mr. Mann, what can we do for you? What's your question?
Well, my comments about the public schools is the reason why they're failing students of color and some of the low-income whites is heavy exposure to inexperienced teachers and watered-down curriculum.
Woo!
No. We were bringing this up when I was active in the education committee of the NAACP back in, 19...
That was 11, 12 years ago. You're absolutely correct, Doug. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, that was those were the big issues for Evelyn Eubanks when she was alive.
The late Evelyn Eubanks, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the school board doesn't want to deal with those. things. They don't want to change that situation. And that's why their plans don't work. You know, their plans to close the gap just don't work and can't work if they don't address those issues.
This goes to a statement made by, of all people, Carla Banks last night when she said she was getting sick and tired of coming to board meetings and talking about everything but education. Carla Bates, school board member, veteran school board member. But go ahead, Mr. Mann.
And there's also, this is unrelated, but there's news on the Viking Stadium lawsuit.
Oh, talk to us. Okay, update us.
Judge Bush did dismiss the writ of mandamus. But his decision was the next best thing that I could get to a ruling in my favor.
Okay.
It was a very weak decision. It basically tore apart the whole notion that the and most of it was devoted to this idea that the charter provisions that require a referendum don't apply. That was stated in the stadium legislation.
Mm-hmm.
That was the argument of the city, and he said that was nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So far so good. You know. Mm-hmm.
Let me just ask this question for our audience. When did he hand down his decision? Because we certainly haven't seen anything in the Minneapolis Star Tribune.
I didn't see it until I got a call from the judge's office this morning. And they faxed me a copy, or they emailed me a copy. And I just finished reading it when I got a call from Minnesota Public Radio.
Oh, good.
And
they
published it. I think maybe the rest of the media is being pretty quiet about this. You know, they're probably going to wait until I get a hearing with the Supreme Court before.
right, okay. And on that question, without you giving anything away with regards to your legal strategy, can you share what your thinking is at this point? Are you prepared to appeal?
I've figured out the arguments to appeal. The judge. I think I figured out the critical weaknesses in the judge's decision, which is that he's saying that stadium legislation preempted the home rule charter provisions that require a referendum, and he didn't exactly say how.
Okay.
He just said, except to make a general statement that the legislature has the authority to, do something like that. But in reality, and he also noted that there was no repeal of provisions.
Okay.
Of the charter provisions. So that's very interesting because the only way for the legislature, the only power or authority that the legislature has to preempt local laws is to pass or enact a general law with like subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And, the general law will preempt the local law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't do this with special legislation. You can do that with general legislation, but not special legislation.
I see. Okay.
And there was no general legislation. I mean, exactly, this...
you this question, Mr. Mann. In the opinion conveyed to you and sent to you, did Judge Bush cite any legal precedent one way or the other? Did he cite any cases, Tyler versus Staples, Minnesota, Jackson versus Minnesota Mining? Did he state any case authority?
On that, but...
The reason I'm asking the question, sir, is you see, you said something earlier that was, very comprehensive on your part, and that is... Sometimes when judges don't want to be slapped down too hard in writing an opinion, they will leave certain areas of significant legal ambiguity, and it will force the appellate to either fill in the blanks or send it back. And that's the reason I asked on what you just said in the last 3 minutes, if Judge Bush cited any precedent, any legal precedent, any case law, as they like to say, because I think he intentionally has left the door open to you to get the attention of the appellate and cause the appellate to have to make a decision to either to send it back and require Judge Bush to provide greater detail and legal specificity, if you will, or indicate that there has to be another hearing. That's very shrewd by Judge Bush. I have to tell you, sir, from my own long experience of dealing with these matters, that was a pretty shrewd move by him, not to cite case precedent.
Well, on that particular point, and which is a special point, I don't recall that he actually cited anything.
Right.
He just made an assertion and, really didn't support it.
But you see, the appellate, if you provide the right argument, the appellate will give heavy weight to that, indicating that the presiding judge in handing down the opinion cannot be cavalier in his assumptions, if you will. That's one of the things, the reason you have judges and
right.
Magistrates and et cetera, is that they are legal practitioners. You are not, I'm not, Mr. Allen's not. And so as a legal practitioner, part of their responsibility that goes with the training is that they need to provide greater detail and specificity. And that's the reason for my comment, sir, that he may very well, Judge Bush, in a very shrewd manner, may have very well left the door open for a favorable reversal on your behalf.
I think that is a possibility, and that's why I'm interested in pursuing an appeal. It has to be done within the appeal needs to be filed within 30 days.
Yes. Yeah.
And I will need to get some people behind on board with this within the coming week. So
yeah.
You can give me a call if you're interested in helping out.
We will do. You please keep us here on the program informed, and we appreciate you now updating, because we've been talking with Mr. Mann for 6 months. He has been tireless, if you will, tenacious in pursuing this, and we now have a ruling by Judge Bush, and I just think that there was enough legal ambiguity in his opinion that he intentionally is opening the door for the appellate to reverse his findings and send it back. This could be interesting. Mr. Mann, we please stay in touch with us, and we'll be talking privately.
Will do. Thanks.
Will do. Thank you, sir. All right. Mr. Allen, your observations, man. What do you think? Because Mr. Mann was absolutely tenacious, basically
yes,
by
was.
Himself.
Yes, he was. And you know what? I think he filed a suit long enough for this decision to have came out before the elections and for him to get an appeal in. It just things don't add up on this. And I was actually reading it online where the judge, it's like you said, it's very manipulative, and it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Of course, I'm not a legal practitioner at all in any way, shape, or form, but I can read and comprehend. And so it doesn't make sense to me. But we do have another caller, Mr. Edwards.
Let's get the callers. Callers are important. Let's get them. Go ahead, caller.
Oh,
you're bored. What can we do for you? Who's calling, and what's your question?
This is Jamar. How you guys doing tonight?
Real
hey,
good.
Okay.
You know, I almost feel a little bad for Superintendent Johnson. You know, I've been guilty myself of bashing her because I don't think that she's doing an adequate job of educating us kids, not just our kids, but the Minneapolis kids. You wonder if her voice truly matters down there, if this lady isn't a pawn in the game. And I know her personally. She was the principal at my nephew's school when he was in junior high school.
Okay.
Very encouraging lady. loves her people, has incredibly good, bright ideals. I can't think of the name of the school. I'm sorry. It escapes me right now. But they went from, she raised the numbers of African-Americans on the testing, came up with different programs, after-school programs, things of that nature. So, you know, I was sitting there thinking, like, you know what, I would like to bash her, and I will continue to bash her. Mm-hmm. But I wonder if they are truly manipulating this lady, and is her ideals being laughed at, mocked at, and ridiculed, and not even, probably not even being listened to. Mm. And she's sitting around just collecting a check, which you know, she should be ashamed of herself. But I wonder, when you look at Dodore Zacharys and the black superintendents, Richard Green, that we've had, that are pro getting every student, not only our kids, but pro every student, especially minority kids, because we know the mountain that they have to climb. I don't understand why she is not swinging a louder stick. And I don't know. I feel a little bad for her. Part of me feels bad for her, but part of me just wants to slap her and say, wake up. What are you doing?
Well, I don't know. Mr. Allen, what's your thinking on the comments by this caller?
Well, I, you know, me and Mr. Nelson, we go back and forth on his, you know, bleeding heart liberal thing and my conservative thing, but but in this case, here's what's happening, Mr. Edwards, and this is how I have to look at it. Within the black community in Minnesota, we don't have thinking people like you, myself, or Mr. Nelson. We have inserted in these high places placeholders. Velma Corbell, Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, placeholders. Michael Kick Brown, placeholder. Kevin Lindsay, Minnesota Department of Human Rights, placeholder. Bernadier Johnson, placeholder. Gore, placeholder. These people function off the marching orders of their superiors and overseers. If people did what was right and did the work, Alfred Babington Johnson, placeholder. Bill English, placeholder. Louis King, placeholder. Okay, they sit there and, you know, money is the key element. Money is the key element. Just like I said at the top of the show, Mr. Edwards, and I don't mean to get off track, but this has to do with education. Why would the Minnesota, Alex Tittle, Minnesota Sports Facility Authority, placeholder, why would they give Louis King and Summit Academy, OIC, $700,000 to train people on the stadium, to work on the stadium, when there have been people trained for damn near 20 years out of that facility, 10, 20 years, whatever. Okay, mm-hmm. No one asked that question. It doesn't make any sense. So these are we're going to give the placeholders, Alfred Fowler, Scott Gray, Al McFarland, we're going to give them some money because this settles everything. This will put them back in a place of comfort. They can go to J.D. Hoyt's on Friday night and run a tab for $400 and go to Elixir and run a tab there for $200-$300 and still have money in the bank. When those of us that actually work hard and every day, you know, we're looking at this going like, wow, how is this happening? There's too many placeholders and not enough worker bees in the black community.
Well,
and I'm done.
Let me say this, I think the comments that are being made at this particular point from our caller and from the Ronnie Donnie team, if you will. I have to say that one of the people that Mr. King and others are extremely angry with, hostile towards, and I've seen it ever since State Senator Jeff Hayden dropped a lug on that whole crew about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, when he indicated that the traditional way of reporting how people had been trained and how the folks' money, the white folks' money, was being spent was no longer the order of the day, and that there would not be a blanket invoice that would be submitted and money just be paid out. And that the money would have to follow the trainee and vice versa. And Mr. Allen and I have talked about that, Mr. Nelson, on these programs for the last number of months, trying to get someone to say that that's not what it is. Now, there was a meeting This is a part of investigative reporting. There was a meeting at the Golden Times Cafe about a month and a quarter ago in which there was a very serious discussion, a very dangerous discussion legally, about how to falsify information as was done on the on Target Field, where documentation was falsified as it pertains to the participation by people of color, but, well, MBEs, as we call them, minority business enterprises, but particularly African Americans. And at the Good Times Cafe in St. Paul, in a back room, if you will, there was significant discussion about how that could be done. Now, there are some who are extremely uncomfortable with this discussion, and what it has evolved into, gentlemen, is extreme hostility towards State Senator Jeff Hayden, who has, and I repeat again, and of course the phone lines will still be open for another 9 minutes, that it will not be acceptable. And he is in a significant position of control as a state senator, but more importantly, majority whip in the Senate. And he is close with State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, who is the co-chair of the special stadium commission appointed by the legislature, if you will. And, gentlemen, I have to tell you that it is really tense right now with respect to the anger and the fact that the invoices, Mr. Allen, Mr. Nelson, that should have been submitted already for the $700,000 is not being submitted because there is significant scrutiny of any anticipated numbers. Now, the full flow of this will not begin until around the 15th of March when allegedly the first crews will begin to be hired. This will be after the demolition and et cetera has been cleaned up. And, in fact, there's a question now being posed to Bolander, who is the construction company that is supposedly will be doing the demolition and will be actually doing the demolition, gentlemen, over a three-year period because of the procedure that M.A. Mortensen says they want to use. And so Bolander is being asked the question about, you know, how many African Americans and others do they have ready to bring in during this three-year demolition? Mm. Because the way that this will be done is that the demolition will take place, and they will do it by sections, if you will, or grid. A section will be taken down, and then the new stadium will be built, and then another section taken down in the structure. So it means Bolander, as an example, gentlemen, will be on site for 3 years. And the question has been asked of Mr. King and others, how many workers with experience in demolition do they have ready to go that will also augment the workers that will be involved in the construction of the new stadium? And this is a fascinating approach and possibility, if you will. And my understanding is that no documentation has been submitted, Mr. Allen, to Mr. Tittle and the Sports Facility Authority, nor to the special commission under the co-chairmanship of State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, with assistant majority leader Senator Jeff Hayden indicating that he's keeping an eye on everybody. Okay.
Well, of course not. When there has to be some form of accountability, of course everyone wants to duck and hide and point the finger of blame. Okay, that's quite that, especially when they're dealing with the almighty dollar. Okay,
yes, sir.
You know, I'm gonna close my eyes, I'm gonna cover my eyes and just hold out my hand, as my uncle used to say. I don't care what's going on. I don't know. So when there's accountability that has to be had, there's someone's got to hide, and it's a shame because if people like Superintendent Johnson and other folks would stand up, they'd get all of us behind them to be accountable. We want some accountability too. That's exactly what all three of us is asking for. Where is the accountability? And if people like Mrs. Johnson that are in positions that are, and don't just take these paper positions and just accept this paycheck, but you're supposed to be doing the people's will in either one of these positions, whether superintendent or state senator or what have you. You're supposed to be doing the will of the people, And when the will of the people is not being served, you not only should be ashamed of yourself, but be gracious enough to step aside and let's elect someone that can and will do what the people elected them to do. Superintendent, you have a long way to go. We have your back, but you have a long way to go.
All right. Brother Nelson, appreciate that. Thank you for calling in, my brother.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate
you. All right. Mr. Nelson made an interesting statement of historical importance, oftentimes used by the military and politicians way back in the 17th and 18th century, and that is, if you're not prepared to stand, if you will, then stand down, step
mm-hmm.
aside. It's the old concept of the British military where when you were accused of cowardliness in the face of the enemy, and you were an officer in the British Army, if you will, rather than humiliate your family, particularly if you had a history and a tradition, if you will, of military service to the British Empire, the way that it would be handled would be that you would receive a letter with a white feather in it, and that was an indication that rather than be castigated, if you will, and embarrassed, that it would be better for you to take the revolver that was on the table and commit suicide.
Mm.
And the system back in those days would cover for you. In fact, this was a part of British military tradition right up until around 1895, maybe even into 1900, not so much during the First World War, but particularly during the so-called colonial wars of that period of 1800 to 1890, let's say. That was a real tradition, and so it was interesting to hear Mr. Nelson talk in terms of the need that if you're not going to do the job, if you're not going to stand guard, stand your post, you know that as a former military person, Mr. Allen, if you're not going to stand your post, then stand aside and stand down.
Or go to jail.
Or receive the knock on the door, receive the envelope with the white feather in it, and take the appropriate action to, quote-unquote, save your good name.
Exactly.
Yes, sir. Well, it's been an interesting program. This is one of these situations where I think we want to thank our callers
mm-hmm.
because we got some significant engagement this evening on, you know, the Minneapolis Star in closing for me on this end, Mr. Allen in Studio B, was the Star Tribune pointed out in this morning's edition of their paper that one of the surveys that was taken showed that the premier issue amongst the citizens of Minneapolis was education.
Mm.
And I think that people have woke up and began to realize, with respect to the caller just before, Mr. Nelson, if you will, and some other callers, the young lady who called us from Michigan, if you will, that folks realize that this detriment that has been imposed upon the African-American community, this curse, is really having some terrible and negative effects upon us. And the reason I use the term warehousing our young people, just getting them ready for the penitentiary.
Exactly.
That's unacceptable, Mr. Allen. That is really unacceptable. Anyways, we're down to it. Like I said, again, we appreciate the many callers, if you will. And, Mr. Allen, why don't you go ahead and wrap it up for us?
Well, we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back Wednesday, 8:30 p.m., for another hour and a half show of the Ron and Don Show. With that, you guys have a nice week, and we look forward to talking to you next Wednesday, same time.
I got something in my bones. Make me want to shout hallelujah. And I want to sing. Sing on.